This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Yik. In the studio with me today, consultant respiratory physician Dr. Ernest Poh. We're going to be looking at chronic obstructive pulmonary disease today, COPD. So not too long ago, the Global Initiative for COPD predicted that the condition would be the third leading cause of death by 2020. And here we are at this point now, this significant milestone. So we want to find out from Dr. Ernest about recent updates on the management of COPD. We'll revisit, of course, what COPD is, what are the symptoms and its treatments, and whether there's any progress being made in reversing the burden caused by the disease. Good afternoon, Dr. Ernest. How are you today?
A very good afternoon, Xiaoyik. Glad to be here again.
If you have any questions for Dr. Ernest or anything you'd like to share on what we're talking about today, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. So Dr. Ernest, we should probably, of course, start with understanding what is COPD. And of course, we've talked about this on our show over the years before, but it's worth revisiting the basics. So if you could first explain this term, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Yeah, it's a mouthful to begin with, yes, isn't it? We tend to use the short form of COPD. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the awareness of COPD is definitely more than the whole long name of the actual disease. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. A lot of, I think, Malaysians generally think COPD is the same as asthma.
Okay.
And while the awareness of asthma is increasing, sad to say, the awareness of COPD as a disease is still very much in
low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what this is that this is actually an obstructive airway disease. What that means is that the airways become obstructed over time, and this causes difficulty in breathing, okay, in short.
All right. And what are the diseases that are clustered under COPD? You mentioned asthma. Is that one of them?
So no, asthma is not the same as COPD. Mm. COPD is primarily a disease among smokers or ex-smokers. Mm-hmm. So up to 90% of the causative factors of COPD is due to cigarette smoking or tobacco smoking. Mm-hmm. And generally over time, because of the inflammation that occurs in the airways due to tobacco smoke, patients develop obstruction and air trapping in their lungs, and thus they become more breathless over time.
Okay, all right. And so how does the condition typically start in a person, and how does it progress?
So it usually starts rather late in the 40s or when someone's in their 50s. And the first sign that they may notice, the first symptom that they may notice is actually being breathless on exertion. Mm-hmm. So when they take their walks or when they climb the stairs, they feel that it's difficult to catch the breath.
Mm-hmm. Is when they're doing some sort of activity.
Correct.
Okay. And how does it progress? How does it worsen?
Over time, the breathlessness becomes worse to the extent that it may limit their activities of daily living, at which point they would start to seek some help for that. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it could be when they catch a respiratory infection, such as, for example, the influenza virus that is very prevalent
in the past few weeks. Yes.
And then they may present to the hospital for the first time with difficulty in breathing.
Oh, I see. So they would perhaps be infected with influenza, and that would perhaps then exacerbate the symptoms of COPD, which they had not
picked up earlier.
Okay. Yeah,
or may not have noticed, or they may have lived with it for such a long time that they have not paid much attention to it.
And do respiratory infections like influenza make a person's COPD worse?
Yes, so they are what we call triggers. So if you get a viral infection, or for example during the haze period where I was last on the show,
yes,
those are triggers that flares up the inflammation in the airways. Mm-hmm. That's what we call an exacerbation treatment. So the patient actually feels worse than his ordinary day, and that's when they come and seek help for those symptoms.
But, you know, you use the word trigger. So it triggers a certain...
cascade of inflammation.
Right. And that is that episode short-lived?
It can be. So some, in milder cases of COPD, or any chronic respiratory illness such as asthma. So those exacerbations can be short-lived, but it depends on the person's well-being overall, his immunity, his or her immunity, and lifestyle he or she practices. And mm-hmm. so the episode can be very short-lived, or it can be very extended as well.
Okay. You know, I read about terms like emphysema, chronic bronchitis being linked to or sort of being parked under COPD. Are there different conditions that you could have that would be diagnosed as COPD? I mean, what's the value of, calling them COPD as opposed to the different diseases?
Correct. So I think emphysema is probably much better known compared to the whole broader umbrella term of COPD. And generally people would say that if you pick up the habit of cigarette smoking when in your teens or in your 20s, by the time you reach your 50s, you would definitely have emphysema. And emphysema just generally means that the terminal part of our lungs, which is a structure called alveoli, loses its stretchability. So it tends to collapse prematurely, and it causes air trapped in the lung. Whereas the other term, chronic bronchitis, tends to refer to excessive inflammation in the airways causing mucus production, and all these inflammatory cells and the secretions actually blocks up the airway. So, I mean, in COPD, majority of patients with COPD would have a combination of these symptoms. So they would have air trapping in the lung due to the loss of the tension in the terminal airways, as well as production of some secretions. And that's why majority of people would have a little bit of cough with some phlegm.
You say a little bit of cough, right? And I think cough is one of those things that is sort of the most vague symptoms that comes with lots of different infections as well. And nobody can ever pin down what's the cause of the cough, and it tends to be a prolonged issue. Is the cough in a person with COPD any different that will make it easier for somebody to pick it up?
No, I think cough in COPD would be the hardest to pick up because majority of smokers do have a cough anyway.
What we call the smoker's cough, right? The productive with the phlegm.
So unless the cough becomes very, very much more severe, or the phlegm production increases, or he or she becomes more breathless, then they would find that symptom worrying and worrisome and seek help for that.
What about the exposure to secondhand smoke? Is that a risk factor for COPD?
Correct. So in ladies, actually, the WHO has said that one of the highest risk factors for ladies is actually secondhand smoke, especially if the husband or the
partner,
male figure or in the house smokes within the house itself. And another big risk factor for women is the indoor pollution caused by household biomass fuel burnings in low-income countries. So in colder countries, or they tend to burn firewood or coal indoors for heating, for cooking. And because it's so cold outside, the windows tends to be shut. So the all these fumes get circulated within the house itself. And over time, not only women, but children as well develop premature airway obstruction and COPD.
Okay. When you talk about sort of that exposure to cooking in particular, would we be seeing anything similar among, say, hawker stall operators?
We may. I mean, a lot of hawker stalls, like what we mentioned previously in our lung cancer session, who use charcoal to fry, to give the extra wok hay to
your
char kway teow. Yeah, chronic exposure to all this biomass can give rise to inflammation. So we do, I mean, I'm sure you've come across some hawker stylists who wear very, very strong protective equipment. You know, they wear goggles and they wear their mask and then they fly.
Very rare.
Yeah, but I've seen a picture recently in Thailand. I think there's a very famous Thai, a lady that cooks Thai omelette, and she's putting on all her personal protective equipment. May not necessarily because she wants to protect herself from the fumes, but more of, I think she's trying to protect her face from the heat and the walls and everything. But yeah, I mean, chronic exposure to all these things does affect the lungs.
Okay. So how big of a problem is COPD in Malaysia? You know, if we look at the global initiative, they were saying it will be the third leading cause of death. It is a primary cause of illness generally. Mm-hmm. What are we seeing here?
Well, back in 2012, there was a projection model that that calculated the amount of cases in Malaysia back then in 2012, that's 8 years ago, was about 500,000. Mm-hmm. So that's 500,000. And I think the cases would have increased by now. Mm-hmm. The prevalence usually among the whole population would range around 5 to 10%. Mm-hmm. And more than two-thirds of these people would be chronic smokers. So, I mean, with the rise in cigarette smoking habits and all, we generally do expect a rise in the overall disease burden.
Mm. Are we showing no signs of reducing the prevalence?
No, because, I mean, if you look at the cigarette smoking rates, you would be able to project the rates of COPD itself. And currently, it's still ranked the fifth in terms of disease burden in Malaysia.
Okay. Mm. We're talking about chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, with Dr. Ernest Poh, consultant respiratory physician. When we come back, we'll look at treatment options, but also is there anything new on the horizon that could potentially improve management of COPD for patients? If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. In the studio with me, Dr. Ernest Poh, consultant respiratory physician, with me to discuss chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. The Global Initiative for Chronic Obstructive Lung Disease sort of made this projection not too long ago that COPD would be the third leading cause of death by 2020. So, you know, back when people make these projections, we think that 2020 or 2030 or whatever is very far away. But here we are in 2020, and COPD is still a very significant problem in Malaysia. Numbers from 2012 show that 500,000 Malaysians were living with COPD, and with a prevalence rate of about 5 to 10% of the population. And an overwhelming number of people with COPD are chronic smokers, because that's smoking. Those who smoke and those who, or even those who used to smoke for a significant period, would be at highest risk of developing this obstruction of the airways. How much of the problem, the burden of COPD in Malaysia, relates to it being undetected or diagnosed late?
So this disease tends to present quite late because, as we have mentioned earlier, a lot of smokers or former smokers tend to ignore the symptoms. And generally, there is not much symptoms in the milder form of COPD until it's moderately severe. Mm-hmm. And so because of the awareness being low, COPD goes undetected until it's quite late.
Mm. And I mean, for your practice, let's say at the tertiary level, you, of course, I would imagine you are seeing them at this sort of mid to late stage already.
Correct.
How do you think we can improve that? If we look at improving it at the primary care level for people who may be going to their GPs or their family physicians with some sort of a cough every now and then, what could we do to increase that sensitivity?
Well, first we have to come back to how is COPD diagnosed. And the diagnosis isn't made just via the patient's symptoms. It's made when the patient actually goes for a lung function test. And this is a test where patients blow into a machine. Mm-hmm. And the machine actually calculates the amount of airflow and predicts how severe the airway obstruction is. Mm-hmm. So I think amongst the primary physicians or our GPs, any patients who are smokers and for a significant amount of time, mm-hmm. and if they keep coming back with recurrent symptoms, a cough that doesn't go away, mm-hmm. Prolonged infection, mm-hmm. They should be referred to tertiary centers for a lung function test. Mm-hmm. But I do see a trend to its general screening. I think a lot of private hospitals now incorporate lung function tests, what is known as spirometry, into their screening packages. And this is a good practice, I think, especially among smokers, where they would get a test done as mm-hmm. a screening measure mm-hmm. to see if they have a mild form of COPD.
Mm. You mentioned keeping an eye out for smokers, especially those who may have a recurrent cough or the infections. Mm. That's interesting, actually. Would having COPD make someone more vulnerable to recurrent respiratory infections?
Mm, yes. So regardless, when you have a chronic respiratory illness, regardless whether it's COPD, asthma, lung fibrosis, all these conditions, generally your lung is at a more stressed, I think, putting in layman's terms, stressed condition, and mm-hmm. you are definitely more at risk of getting an infection.
All right. Because earlier we talked about how, with the rise in influenza cases of late, mm-hmm. Many people would be perhaps only coming in and having COPD picked up because the influenza has sort of exacerbated or triggered the symptoms of COPD, which is, things like you said, breathlessness on exertion and a bit of a cough. Mm. So let's look at how would you sort of like co-manage these respiratory infections and COPD, but also should people experiencing any sort of the symptoms of COPD go and get a flu vaccination straight away?
So generally when we diagnose someone with COPD, and you did correctly mention, most of the times it would be in the mid to severe stage of COPD. Vaccinations is recommended. Of course, we don't force them to go mm-hmm. for it, but it is recommended to prevent themselves from picking up an infection, because the risk of lung or airway damage with each infection actually becomes more and more severe. Mm. It's sort of like how we think of a heart attack for the heart, but the lung itself has an attack when an infection occurs. Mm. And basically the patient's lung function never fully recovers to its original state prior to the infection. So vaccination is generally very recommended in this group of population.
Okay. So then let's look at the treatment of COPD or managing it. There's no cure for COPD, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about management of COPD, the first step is to get them to quit smoking.
Of course.
And to help them to quit smoking. I wouldn't say that there is no cure, because the lung function actually just recovers to a certain extent after one stops smoking completely. Mm. And so there is an amount of recovery. And over time, if they have stopped smoking, generally with follow-up and with proper care, rehab, even vaccinations and all, patients do leave with COPD, but they don't fall into that category of very severe, keep needing hospitalizations, recurrent exacerbations and infections. So there is always we always tell our patients it's never too late to stop smoking.
So you mean things like, how you mentioned earlier, most people with COPD have, people who have been smoking for a long time would have emphysema, the collapse of that terminal airway?
Correct.
What you said?
Correct.
Do you mean that if somebody stops smoking, that part of the lungs can repair itself structurally?
Well, there are two components to it. So firstly, when you stop smoking, you are removing the trigger that starts up all this inflammation and this damages that occurs along the airway. Emphysema is quite difficult to reverse, because actually those structures are destroyed, but you are actually trying to prevent further destruction. So that's one point. But over time, when you do I mean, certain things like rehab and all, you're strengthening your respiratory muscles to breathe more efficiently. And mm-hmm. so other parts that are mildly damaged, their function can be improved over time.
I see.
So they compensate for the areas that have been damaged beyond repair.
Okay. Mm. So first step, quit smoking. Mm. How many patients actually do that successfully?
It's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Usually those that come in with a very, very major exacerbation. They might be admitted to the ICU, or they might come in with a heart attack or even a stroke, a mild stroke. And you know, it's those life-defining moments where some scary events happen to you, and that would sort of like shock you out to quit smoking. Or, for example, if you're diagnosed with lung cancer, that would sort of like shock you out of your system to quit cold turkey.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it is very, very difficult to stop the habit of smoking.
Okay. But you also mentioned that COPD is a concern or could be a risk for people who used to smoke. So even in those who perhaps had smoked for a significant number of years but quit at some point, if they develop COPD later on, what's the cause of management for them?
So it depends on the severity, how much damage has occurred in the lungs. The management usually is directed towards opening up the airways. So what we call bronchodilation, and that means opening up the airways to remove the air that's trapped in the lung, to allow air to exit the lungs and to enable adequate gas exchange. Mm. So good oxygenation, good capacity to push out the carbon dioxide or the bad gases in our lungs.
Mm.
And so treatment is directed towards that. With less air trapped in the lungs, your respiratory muscles tends not to be overworked.
Mm.
And over time, you would feel much better. You would have a better quality of life.
Mm. So would a person need oxygen therapy?
So very severe patients with COPD, as we mentioned just now, recurrent attacks. Each time you get an attack, the lung function never fully recovers.
Mm.
So at one point or another, the oxygenation is just not enough for living, and they would need oxygen.
If you could remind us again, what would an attack typically look like?
So attack, there will usually be a trigger. So a trigger could be a viral infection, could be, continuous cigarette smoking. And patients would come in feeling very breathless, unable to get up, even walk to the toilet in the morning, prolonged fever, cough, infections, and they would just have to come in because they can't breathe.
Okay. Mm. What's the acute management at that point?
So we have already mentioned some of them, which is the opening up of the airways to allow them to breathe and
to release the
trapped air and to ensure adequate oxygenation. Of course, we also give them steroids. That's to dampen the inflammation around the airways and sometimes we do need to give them antibiotics if there is a bacterial infection involved.
And so you mentioned, the releasing of the trapped carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
The European Respiratory Society recommends long-term home non-invasive ventilation for patients who have this problem of CO2 retention.
Mm-hmm.
How does this work and who would it be suitable for?
Okay, so before we go into that, we need to understand a bit about non-invasive ventilation. That's a big word. So ventilation means, what it means is just pushing air into your lungs and allowing air to escape from the lungs.
So it's helping you to breathe.
So it's helping you to breathe, correct. We had the tagline just now, breathe freely
in Malaysia. That's right.
All right.
That's right. So, that's what we are trying to achieve here.
Okay. So so we have two forms of ventilation. Invasive, meaning you stick down a tube into the airways and you join the tube to a ventilator and the ventilator does the job of the breathing for you while you rest the respiratory muscles. Non-invasive ventilation just means that we do not stick any tubes down the airways.
We
put a mask over the patient's face and the machine provides a pressure that helps with breathing.
Okay.
So what you've mentioned is that the society recommends this sort of ventilation for patients with chronic carbon dioxide retention. That means they they have very low oxygenation and they can't release the trapped the bad gases from the lungs.
And regardless, this is when other forms of treatment are not working?
No, this is usually when all forms of treatment have been given.
Okay.
So it's like the maximal standard of care for COPD patients. And so the society recommends the usage of these devices. So it's a small little machine that connects to a mask and the patient uses it during the day and night to breathe.
Okay, all right. And so this is in patients whose damage is so extensive.
Correct.
That you sort of need to give them that full spectrum.
Correct.
Okay. So in my reading, it does seem that, the society is recommending it. It can improve quality of life, but there's a significant cost involved. Mm. I mean, how would it look like, say, here in Malaysia? Mm. Would this be something you could realistically prescribe?
I think it would be. We are still very far away from this at this stage. The machines are not cheap. They cost in their thousands.
Mm.
So, putting everyone on this non-invasive ventilation, or what we call NIV in short, is not looking too bright at the moment.
Okay. You mentioned rehab. So one of the objectives of that would be to strengthen your lung muscles.
Respiratory muscles, correct.
To be able to compensate for the other parts that are mm-hmm. damaged.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of exercises do you do in this rehab?
So it's a trained program. Patients come in and out of the... In overseas, they tend to do it in the community centres.
Mm.
But in Malaysia, I mean, this service is still pretty new and we tend to do it in hospitals, mm-hmm. Tertiary centres. Patients come in for counselling. So they get psychological support, emotional support. They have dietary counselling as well to enable them to eat better, to strengthen the respiratory muscles. And they basically do exercises. So they can do a combination of aerobic and non-aerobic exercises to strengthen their capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do things such as walking up the stairs, walking. Mm-hmm. And they would notice that over time they can walk a longer amount of distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, and with better nutrition and better care, we hope that, patients can... cope with their activities of daily living.
But is this kind of comprehensive rehab program actually available in all hospitals?
Not all. I think the ministry and there are more training opportunities available these days for rehab physicians.
Mm.
And a lot of them are being trained into different areas of rehab. And pulmonary rehab is an important area to train people to be good at and to run centres, even to extend it out of the hospital to community centres where patients can, just go to a nearby community centre for rehab rather than go, rather than go to a big hospital.
To a hospital, that's right.
Fight
which
for
is
parking and then...
not always accessible.
Correct.
We know the problems with our public hospitals as well. But, in the event that a patient just can't have access to a rehab service like this, what can they do at home then?
Sometimes the rehab services, these are generally patients that are not so severe. Some form of coaching and... training their caregivers to do the certain exercises each day would be adequate and would serve as a form of pulmonary rehab but done at home.
Mm.
And they may not need to come on a weekly basis. They can be just monitored on a monthly or two-monthly basis to see where they're getting along. And then over time, the exercises can be graded and increased to allow more capacity, more function.
Yeah. Mm. What kind of outcomes would you be looking at for a patient? If we presume that somebody is sort of following the management plan and all that, what does it look like for somebody to be living with COPD that's quite well managed?
Mm. So I think the biggest difference that patients, if they can pull off quitting smoking, the biggest benefits would be, they would have better appetite firstly. They would say their food tastes awesome for the first time because smoking generally does dampen your taste buds. But they would also feel less lethargic. Their heart rates would come down once the nicotine has wear off. Once the carbon monoxide gets out of the body, there is less risk of, all these complications that occur with the heart. And they generally would feel better. They can do more. Mm-hmm. They can food taste better. In fact, I think overall, the quality of life does improve for them.
Mm, yes. Mm. Again, it comes back to that, isn't it? Quitting smoking. Mm. I mean, I started off asking you, you know, if a patient has COPD that's well managed, but what's the reality? How well treated is COPD actually in Malaysia?
Mm. So I think that, I mean, that question is twofold. Firstly, I think we have to look at how well is our quit smoking services in Malaysia, because mm-hmm. that is the biggest and most important treatment when we are treating COPD patients. Mm-hmm. And I think although there are a lot of services in place, a lot of them are not really enforced adequately. I think one of the smoking cessation services that we were talking about, MQIT.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes.
So that there is a joint network of hospitals and pharmacies catered to provide support to patients who have decided to quit. But I think in terms of accessibility to that service, it is still very poor. And a lot of people, even hospital or healthcare workers, are not aware that there is this service available. And when we talk about quitting smoking, I think in any addictions, when you're trying to stop a lifelong habit or an addiction, the impulse to quit may be there, but it's very short-lived. Mm. So it's just like our New Year resolutions, you know, everybody heads to the gym to exercise in January, but come February, you know, there'll probably be like 50% dropout rate.
Yes.
So it's the same with quit smoking. If you are trying to quit, so when you start the year, let's say, I'm going to quit smoking in 2020. And then you go to the hospital and then you see there are no signatures for quit smoking services. Then you start asking the nurses or the receptionist, how do I get to a quit smoking services? Mm-hmm. And they don't know. They go to the pharmacy, they say, oh, we don't have anyone tailored to help you with that. You just buy this nicotine patch and help yourself with it. Mm. So over time, these methods will not work.
Mm. So you're saying that For a smoking cessation, for somebody to be able to quit smoking successfully, they've got to be part of a cessation program.
Correct.
They can't just buy the patches or chew the gum and expect to be able to stop.
Yeah, so it's, many studies have come up with success rates for smoking. And of course, different drugs that are used have different success rates, but they all come in a package with you need psychological support, you need emotional support. Mm. You know, if you're hanging out with a group of friends that smokes every day, you're not going to be able to quit. And you're not, willpower isn't enough
to do it. So you need to get new friends now.
That's hard when we get older by age.
So, I mean, if you're talking about sort of trying to target reducing smoking, the Ministry of Health has been commended for banning smoking in eateries. And that's a pretty big step for us in terms of a public health policy targeting smoking. Mm. What else do you think would help?
Well, I think if you're talking about just places alone, I think public toilets should be included as well, because a lot of people tend to smoke in the public toilets.
Absolutely,
and when you go to the toilets, they just smell cigarette smoke.
That's right.
But I think before patients actually get hooked on the idea of smoking, I think education at a very, very young age, all the way down to your primary schools, or they need to, students need to be taught about smoking and what it does to you. Mm. And that would sort of like probably inhibit some of them from trying out, you know, that curious stage where you try out with your friends or your peer pressure to try out a cigarette. And because a lot of them would get addicted to it after trying it out. So
so
I think stopping it where it starts, before it starts, it's more important than, of course, it's important to help people to get out of the habit as well. But it's easier, I think, to target our education, to educate people about certain habits and what are the potential effects that it can do to your body.
So my concern with that is I think the sort of the dangers of smoking, that narrative, people are well aware of it. Mm. And the thing is, with vaping and e-cigarettes coming in, it seems to have changed that storyline to, well, smoking is bad. Mm. Try e-cigarettes to help you quit. And The problem, of course, is also that young people then start on e-cigarettes instead of smoking, thinking that it's a much better alternative. Are you seeing any vaping-related issues in your clinic?
Yes, we do have patients who come in with inflammation or in what we call pneumonitis of the lungs, and that can be due to the substance that they vape. So there has also been, globally, there are also some deaths that's been reported with certain vaping substances. So it's not a safer alternative. Even e-cigarettes, I mean, there is also combustion of all this, although a bit at a lower rate, but there is also combustion of all this.
Substances.
Substances. And it's not it's not a one-off solution that would help with cigarette smoking. I think dealing with any addiction is very difficult. There are a lot of factors involved, psychological, emotional, and all this stress factors in life that pushes you to it smoking. For some people, it may work, to help them with the nicotine addiction, but there are actually much safer ways to deal with that rather than going on to vaping and e-cigarettes.
So coming back to COPD, I started off the show talking about this prediction by the Global Initiative for Chronic Obstructive Lung Disease that 2020, this year, COPD would be the third leading cause of death. Are you... how confident are you that we can make any progress in reducing that?
I think the trend is we have already gone through this over and over again, is to focus our efforts towards quitting smoking. Correct. Yeah. And I think if there is adequate manpower support and proper programs being run at easily accessible areas. We are talking about even as close as our nearby pharmacy. So if there is a team of people that can come in and work together, then I think the program can reach far greater heights. And the problem of COPD awareness and prevention can be reduced.
I mean, that's the idea of MQIT, the program, isn't it? That it should be pharmacists, your local pharmacies would sign on to it and therefore be accessible.
Correct. But I would be, I'm very wary of the enforcement, and putting the whole burden towards just a sole pharmacist who may be the main person in any pharmacy that we go to. So I think it has to be a bit more comprehensive. More people have to come in and there has to be more follow-ups and more surveillance on what's actually going down right at the pharmacy level if you're going to incorporate all of them.
Okay. We have a tweet from Dr. Amir Siddiq. He's, of course, a consultant psychiatrist and he comes on our show regularly as well. He's saying that Malaysia is already seeing people with pneumonitis from vaping, as you mentioned.
Correct.
And that is a huge cause for concern, especially when we talk about we don't want to be reducing smoking if we are lucky or if we are able to do that, but seeing it replaced by a completely different problem, vaping.
Correct.
Do you have a final message, Dr. Ernest, when it comes to COPD? I know you're going to bring up smoking again.
We probably won't touch on that anymore. Amir is an expert in quit smoking services. He runs most of our programs in UM.
Right. That's right.
So I think if you have already, hooked on to the habit, we weren't even talked about quitting smoking, but there is available help. You need to seek a professional who could help with improve your quality of living. Measures such as vaccination cannot be,
emphasized. Yeah, it's very important.
It's very important, especially with all our flu outbreaks. Usually it's around the months of December to February where we get most of our influenza outbreaks. But this year
it
has
started a little bit early.
And it's pretty harsh this year. We have had quite a lot of patients coming down with influenza. And so patients like these with chronic respiratory illness needs to be vigilant. They need to get their vaccination done on a yearly program. And usually the WHO recommends in October before the whole outbreak starts. So I cannot overemphasize the importance of vaccination.
Get your vaccination, which, you know, I hope you are able to get your hands on, because everyone, of course, is concerned about influenza right now.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ernest. I've been speaking to Dr. Ernest Poh, consultant respiratory physician, about reducing the burden of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease right here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.